persecution. And then we talked about one of the biggest principles that was used to write our Constitution that our founders thought about was the sinfulness of man. And they understood that the sinfulness of man could be a problem, and that it would be a problem. Then I went in and talked a little bit about Calvinism and about the depravity of man based on Jeremiah 17:9, the heart is deceitful above all things. We talked about mostly the depravity, and then we left off, I think, where we were talking about, or I mentioned the Federalist Papers. What were they? I think that's where we left off. So that's where I'm going to pick up this morning in this particular lecture, and then I will, this will be like one of the last lessons that we have in this. Brother Stiles will be here Friday night and Saturday night, and then, of course, he'll be here Sunday as well. Those of you that have been in the Sunday School series, you'll have known a good amount of this. We're losing our freedoms. I shared this with some in Sunday School this morning, or in early service, I mean. They weren't aware of this, but in the state of Georgia, this is a case that's been going on a little bit now, but the government asked a preacher to turn in his sermons and his sermon notes. And he said the government, his attorneys said the government was curious about sermons that Dr. Walsh delivered on health, marriage, probably the sanctity of marriage, sexuality, world religions, science, and creationism. He also preached on what the Bible says regarding homosexuality. Well, this is a serious violation of religious freedom in America. When the courts begin to, and this is Georgia, okay? This is the so-called Bible Belt. This isn't like, you know, liberal California or liberal New York. I mean, this is Georgia. So hopefully the lawyers will win this case and it will not be. But Family Research Council President Tony Perkins, some of you probably read from him, condemned the state's demand, calling it an alarming display of government intrusion into the sanctity of the church, pastors study in the pulpit. And it is. It is an attack on religious freedoms. It's kind of scary in some ways to see where this stupid nation is headed. Our founders realized, based on Jeremiah 17:9 and Romans chapter 3, which we read both of those last week, that because of the depravity of man and the sinfulness of man, there could be a real problem. I want to talk to you this morning, though, about the Federalist Papers and what they are. After the Constitution was drafted in 1787, it had to be ratified by 9 of the 13 colonies before it could become the law of the land. There were 85 letters, I just introduced this a little bit last week, that were sent to the editor. They were anonymous letters, and they were pro-Constitution letters. They became known as the Federalist or the Federalist Papers. They shed light on what the founders really meant and they intended the Constitution to mean and say, and so it was a definition of it, since they were written by the Constitutionalist, contemporary at the same time. Dr. Gibbs said, David Gibbs, the Christian Law Association, who we support and who I have called for advice on probably a half a dozen times or so in the ministry here, he said, the Federalist Papers should be required reading for all law students, as should the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. But they are not. Which, if the Constitution is the law of the land, and the Federalist Papers were written by constitutionalist people to define what they meant in those laws, then they should have a clue as to what the law of the land meant. But they're no longer mandatory reading. I think William Blackstone is the gentleman's name who has some commentaries out. And there are, I was listening to David Barton yesterday in the radio, and he's got a couple of new books out on the original intent of the Constitution. David Barton, has anybody ever heard of David Barton in here? What a brainiac that guy is. Oh my goodness, he knows the history of this country. And he can just pop it off like this. In this day, this happened. And in this day, this happened. And he doesn't need notes or anything. I mean, he just knows it. And you ought to get a hold of his material. He's got two new books out on the original intent of the Constitution. There's a co-author. I forget the guy's name. But, I mean, they are good. They're just really good. Everything he's written. He also has, if you don't like to read, I find that a lot of people today do not read. They'd rather watch television or be entertained, but they don't read a lot, which is a sad thing. Okay, I'll get this right. You put a DVD into your television, and you can watch. He's got a lot of DVDs out, and you can even watch it. I mean, just you can learn a lot of stuff. Anyway, when law students graduate and they pass their bar exams and they begin to practice law without ever even having a vague understanding of the overarching biblical principles that formed our nation, the Constitution, and all of our laws. They don't understand. They've never been taught about the biblical foundation. Now, at first, nobody knew who wrote these papers called the Federalist. We do know today who wrote them. Alexander Hamilton, James Madison, and John Jay. Now, all three of these men professed faith in Jesus Christ. They were Christians with a biblical worldview as opposed to a secular worldview, and they are the ones that wrote those papers. James Madison, who was considered by some as the father of the Constitution, not everybody would go that far, but some would, they all agree that he had tremendous influence on shaping our government. His view of government and the law was shaped by his biblical Christianity. He attended, I mentioned this last week, he did attend what was known as a Calvinistic school, Princeton. Princeton is so far removed from anything close to Bible today. What's that great evangelist that preached during the Great Awakening? George Whitefield. He wouldn't even be allowed to speak there today, I promise you that. But he was president at one time there. Anyway, he sat under the tutelage of Dr. John Witherspoon, who was the only pastor that actually signed the Declaration of Independence. Of Madison, though, Bishop Meade said this: Mr. Madison was sent to Princeton College perhaps through fear of the skeptical principles that were so prevalent at William & Mary. During his stay at Princeton, a great revival took place, the Great Awakening, and it is believed that he partook of its spirit. On his return home, he conducted worship in his father's house. He soon after offered for the legislature, and it was objected to him by his opponents, and they said he was better suited to be in the pulpit than in the legislative hall. He was a solid biblical Christian. And he said this: all men having power ought to be distrusted to a certain degree. Why did he say that? Because he understood the sinfulness of man. Now, with our current administration, he would have probably said all men should not be trusted at all. Okay, that's the way that's changed. Perhaps the most important lesson Madison learned from his Princeton education was the firm belief in the biblical doctrine of man's sinfulness. This is a strong principle that pushed the Constitution. Because man sinned, government must institute a system of checks and balances to protect its citizens from tyranny. Legal historian John Eidsmer writes, Dr. John Witherspoon, Madison's teacher and mentor at Princeton, said this: although Witherspoon derived the concept of a separation of powers from other sources, and he named some, checks and balances seem to have been his own unique contribution to the foundation of the United States government. Witherspoon was a theological biblical teacher at Princeton. Pastor Witherspoon's strong Christian theology greatly influenced Madison's philosophy of political science. In Federalist Paper 10, Madison wrote, "It is in vain to say that the enlightened statesmen will be able to adjust their clashing interests and render them all subservient to the public good. Enlightened statesmen will not always be at the helm." Wow, is that true? We have come to a day, I would almost say that a solid biblical Christian would probably not win an election in America. But he was right when he said they may not always be at the helm. Well, right now they're not at the helm. Probably the closest thing that could happen to getting some biblical concepts or philosophy in the White House, at least, would probably be Vice President Pence if he were ultimately to become Vice President. He would probably be the closest thing that you would have up at the upper levels. Which the good news is, and I don't want to wish bad on anybody, but you know, he would only be one heartbeat away from the presidency, which wouldn't be... So that would be if we could get a president like that. But as far as him running for president with his views, and many of them with a very strong background biblically, it's not likely, unless people are so fed up, and I'm not sure that everybody is, so fed up that he would win. In Federalist 47, Madison said, he explained why government power had to be divided between forces. He said, the accumulation of all powers, legislative, executive, and judiciary, in the same hands, whether of one or few, or many, or whether hereditary, self-appointed, or elective, may justly be pronounced the very definition of tyranny. If you had, and it doesn't matter which one you want to say, Republican, Democrat, if you had a whole group that they ran all the branches of the government, you could very much have a tyranny, even though it's not one person. Having so recently escaped from the tyrant of England, which they did, the drafters of the Constitution were careful not to merely replace him with another tyrant. Dr. Edgemere concluded, one thing is certain. The Christian religion, particularly Reverend Witherspoon's Calvinism, don't let that word scare you, which emphasized the depravity of man and the fallen nature of man, influenced Madison's view of law and government. I think that's a good thing. His concepts of checks and balances took into account the temptation in man's nature to greed and selfishness. It took away from any group of men the power to become tyrannical, or it was intended to do that anyway. Dr. Witherspoon said this, the people in general ought to have regard to the moral character of those whom they invest with authority, either in the legislature, executive, or the judiciary branches. I was talking to my wife last night, and I said, if Hillary Clinton wins, she very well might be the most immoral president we will have ever had. She is against everything that seems to be good. She's against it. This is unbelievable. Madison wasn't alone in professing his Christian doctrine of original sin and insist that this concept be incorporated into the new government system of checks and balances. They all knew that became that because man was sinful, power could not be vested in any one person. Even Benjamin Franklin, who claimed to not believe the Bible, and I was going to bring his speech over this morning and I forgot to bring it. I was going to read it to you. But anyway, recognized man's natural propensity towards sin. Now, this is supposedly a non-believer that says this. There is scarce a king in 100 who would not, if he could, follow the example of Pharaoh, get first of all the people's money, then all their lands, and then make them and their children servants forever. He's right. That's what they want. Now, if I go back and I talk about the morals issue in temperature of our country, it is very, very bad. Very bad. You know that. And now when the government, and hopefully this is going to die, but when a government starts to ask preachers to send in their sermons and their sermon outlines, you are headed for, like, I don't want to say atheistic, there ought to be a remnant somewhere around, but you're headed for bad ways. There was another author of those Federalist Papers, Alexander Hamilton, and he wanted to form an association. Its object first, this was what he said we needed to do. The support of the Christian religion. Secondly, he said, the support of the United States. I agree with his philosophy. Governor Morris said, religion is the only basis of good morals. Therefore, education should teach the precepts of religion and the duties of man toward God. Not in 2016. Can you? Education excludes the principles of God's word and religion. Now, before Hamilton could establish that association, he was killed in a battle. You can read a duel, actually. You can read about that. But in Federalist Paper number 6, he said this: "It is not time to awake from the deceitful dream of a golden age and to adopt as a practical maxim for the direction of our political conduct that we, as well as other inhabitants of the globe, are yet remote from the happy empire of perfect wisdom and perfect virtue." Then in Federalist 15, he wrote, "Why has government been instituted at all? Because the passions of men will not conform to the dictates of reason and justice without constraint." He's right. We have to have boundaries. The Bible puts boundaries around us. And so you hear people like myself said several times, you have freedom within the boundaries. Once you step outside of the boundaries, you lose your freedom. There has to be some guidelines that you can't step over the guidelines. Now, the last two Sunday nights, I preached a message on it's right to judge and be judgmental, and it's okay to not be tolerant, because we all are. And I had a message on truth and that we must have absolute truth. There's boundaries. Once you cross outside of those boundaries, you lose your freedom. You have freedom to operate within these. But man, because he's selfish, only thinks of himself, constantly wants to step across the boundaries. So there has to be some constraints, as Hamilton said. Now, they recognized that there were some positive traits in people that we need to possess in order for a representative government to be successful. So Hamilton wrote this in Federalist 55. It discusses the necessity in a republican or representative form of government for both the electors and those elected. He said this: "As there is a degree of depravity in mankind which requires a certain degree of circumspection and distrust, so there are other qualities in human nature which justify a certain portion of esteem and confidence. Republican government presupposes the existence of these qualities in a higher degree than any other form." In other words, we think that you can actually govern yourself a little bit and say, you know what, that's wrong if I do it, and that's right if I do it. Now, here is an important point. Following the self-governing compacts and covenants and constitutions that were drafted by the Puritan New England and other colonies, they believed the best government rests in the authority of the people. We, the people. They believe that. They believe that we were to have the greater power. Madison said, "In a Republican government, the majority, however, ultimately give the law." Do you feel like that's happening in our nation today? Not happening. In America, we have seen that when secularists have the power and they have the majority, they create what they want. And we have seen, listen, when they don't have the majority to enact legislation favorable to them, they have taken an alternate route to establish their own anti-God agenda through sympathetic judges who reinterpret both our history and the Constitution itself, and they actually make law. The judges are making law. You know what you hear a lot of today? Executive orders. President Obama has probably signed in more executive orders than any president. I don't think the other ones are close, to be honest. He has also released more criminals back into the street than any president. And I don't mean like, you know, that guy got a speeding traffic 6 times so they put him in jail for a year. I'm talking about hardcore criminals, drug lords, murderers, rapists. He lets them go. It's unbelievable. The government today, the New York Safe Act, was passed in a day. maybe a few hours over with Governor Cuomo, and at that time his two other compadres that met at night formed what they wanted to make their agenda go through. The next day, everybody was asked to vote on it. It even made... Do you carry a gun, Scott, when you're working? Did it make your gun illegal? It made a lot of the policemen's guns illegal because they had to make some modifications to it. But they make these middle-of-the-night deals. They vote against the known will of the people. 31 states at one time had voted for or against same-sex marriage. All 31 states voted no. That would have been the will of the people. By the vote, it would have been no. But the government, in its infinite wisdom, decided, we're going to make it legal anyway. So when we say we the people, we don't no longer have we the people. I was at a VVS school board meeting one night. And it was a packed meeting because the new history, the new science or health book was coming out. And it promoted sex for young people. And parents were not happy with it. And so they didn't even let us know about this, but one of our neighbors put a postcard on everybody's house. And so we all went. Every person there that stood up and spoke was against VVS School District using this particular textbook. The vote was 100%, we're going to do it anyway. Mrs. Wise was in Rome for a school meeting. And she told me the same thing. She said, the people voiced their opinion. 7 people on the board voted directly against the people. Now, this is wrong. It's just wrong. Corruption in our government. You know, I talked to a guy the other day, and I finally had to end the conversation because I was going to get angry. He really thinks that Hillary Clinton did nothing wrong in this email scandal. I'm like, how can you possibly believe that? And people that work for the government just laugh. They know what she did. They know how wrong. I guess they've reopened that case again. Wouldn't you think, now maybe it's just me, but it makes sense to me, which is not allowed in America to have sense, but it makes sense to me that if somebody has an investigation going on about them, maybe they ought not to run for president during this particular time. But for her, it seems to be, what if she's found guilty? They won't find her guilty. If she could be guilty of anything, and she won't be found guilty. The first person she would bring to witness for her on the stand would be President Obama. Somebody going to vote anyway. But people actually believe that she didn't do anything wrong. She did all kinds of things wrong. What about Benghazi? I talked to a 70-year-old man not that long ago. He didn't even know what Benghazi was. 4 people are dead pretty much because of her, including our ambassador, one of our ambassadors. I said, she's just an immoral person. And the corruption in our government, and that's federal. Every person that's been in the government in New York State lately seems to end up in jail. And I heard the lawyer that went after Skelos and Silver, I think I've heard he's going after Cuomo next. Who in the world down there isn't corrupt? And he doesn't seem to be intimidated or afraid of, no matter what your last name is. Have you recently watched the news where people that really try to come after Mrs. Clinton end up dead? Even this year? It's unbelievable, the corruption. Now, we are getting what our founders got when they left England. Taxation without representation. And we, the people, pretty much don't have a voice. Now, our forefathers, and I can't really develop this like I'd like to, also believe that we need to be a republic, not a democracy. What the founders meant when they established a republic and not a democracy, Madison said in Federalist 14, he said, it is, then in a democracy, the people meet and exercise the government in person. In a republic, I got this wrong, they assemble and administer it by their representatives and agents. A democracy consequently must be confined to a small spot. a republic may be extended over a large section. Now, think about our government. He said a democracy must be confined to a small spot. Is government small today? It's huge. John Adams also argued for the superiority of a republic over a democracy. He said there is no government, but that is republican. The very definition of a republic is an empire of laws, not of men. So there are laws. The Constitution is the law of the land. The judges today change it. He said, an empire of laws, not of men. That form of government which is best contrived to secure an impartial and exact execution of the laws is best of republics. Today, America is greatly divided. Greatly divided. It's almost like there's two or three different cultures within our nation. When they came to form a nation that would be one nation under God, and we just don't have that. Now, and I'm going to tell you what why I personally think the number one reason is they forgot this book. They forgot it. Our forefathers rested on the doctrine of the sinfulness of man. And today, it's forgotten. In a pure democracy, the people hold all power directly. We do not have that. So the founders established this nation as a republic in which the government functions through elected officials. Now, I will say that can work. A few years ago, do you guys remember when they wanted to open that strip club over here by 365? Well, those meetings were packed. I went to one of them, and there was some other business to take care of. But every person that stood up and spoke, without question, said, this is bad. This is bad. This is bad. Melody Miller, teaching Sunday school, she stood up and spoke. My wife spoke. I spoke. They spoke at one. I spoke at a different one. There was two meetings. But everybody gave pretty much the same opinion. Don't do this. Don't do this. Don't do this. Please don't do this. And ultimately, it was voted down. It can work. Madison said, elected representatives of the people are able to administer government more wisely than the people themselves, acting as a pure democracy. True. He thought that elected officials, representatives, would be more likely to apply their collective wisdom for the best interests of the country as a whole, so long as they were not given to temper, prejudices, or sinister designs. But today, that wouldn't be the case. They are given to prejudices. They really are. And you know who they're most prejudiced against? You, a Christian. That's who they're most prejudiced against. He argued that a republic is to be preferred over democracy because through elected officials, the government can more effectively deal with deep-seated disagreements of opinion. But division is a problem. They got away from the Bible. What is the beginning of wisdom? The fear of the Lord. And as a rule, those people who lead our nation don't have a fear of the Lord. Some of them even don't even want us to talk about God. There is your biggest problem. Here's the other third biggest problem. We voted in ungodly people. They are not into the Bible at all. The nation divided. We lost wisdom. They got away from the Bible. And the result of all that is this. One bad decision after the next, after the next, after the next. Now, as a Christian, we don't have a lot of representation. Today, there is an imbalance of power. But our founders understood that the constitutional government that placed ultimate power in the hands of the people requires a virtuous people. That's our next problem. We don't have virtuous people as a whole in America today. So, they had the Black Regiment, which we studied a few months or two ago. They were expected to assume an important role in keeping the nation straight. Reverend Samuel Cooper of Boston, on the day Massachusetts unveiled its state constitution, gave a sermon. And in a sermon, and he was a member of the Black Regiment, by the way, he said this, "Is piety and virtue support the honor and happiness of every community? They are peculiar requisite in a free government. Virtue is the spirit of a republic, For where all power is derived from the people, all depends on their good disposition. If they are impious, factious, and selfish, if they are abandoned to idleness, dissipation, luxury, and extravagance, if they are lost to the fear of God and the love of their country, all is lost. Having got beyond the restraints of a divine authority, they will not brook the control of laws enacted by rulers of their own creating. We may therefore rely that the present government will do all it fairly can by authority and example to answer the end of this institution, that the members of this commonwealth may lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness as well as honesty, and our liberty never be justly reproached as licentiousness. Well, he talks about godliness, honesty, liberty, a quiet and peaceable life. That is not what we see happening in the general public of America. American Christians need to understand what is at stake in our nation today. Your religious freedom is at stake. Since the 60s, because of various decisions by the United States Supreme Court that favor secularism over religion, we are straying from our founding biblical principles. Many Americans want to forget God. We regularly break His laws. We no longer think them important to our survival as a nation. It ought to be a gimme that one of the first things you look at when you vote in a few days now would be, where does this candidate stand on the nation of Israel? Well, I'm not supposed to support any one candidate. Any candidate that makes a deal in agreement with Iran, we have a problem. They're not pro-Israel. And what is the promise that God gave? He that blesses thee, I will bless. And he that curses thee, I will curse. That's what's happened. A lot of Americans want to forget God. Courts have gone so far as to say that parts of our Judeo-Christian heritage is unconstitutional, should be removed. President Adams said, "We have no government armed with people capable of controlling with human passions unbridled by morality and religion. Avarice, ambition, revenge, or gallantry would break the strongest cords of our Constitution as a whale goes through a net. Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other." I don't know if he was a prophet or not, but he said our Constitution was made for a moral and religious people. Are we moral as a nation? I mean, I believe you guys are, but I'm talking as a nation. Is America morally pure? Not even close. Religious. If you take out secular humanism, we're not a religious people. So then he said, our government is inadequate for any other people. So if you go back and you think this through, and if you go back to the founding of our nation where it was based on biblical Christianity, but they got away from the Bible, they got away from virtue, they got lazy, they became idle, and they got away from the book of God, they lost their moral fiber, they lost religious involvement, our government's not working. And evidently it can't work. So you wonder, what do we do? Mr. Kennedy, John Kennedy, said in his address in 1961, he has said, "I am proud of the revolutionary belief for which our forebears fought, the belief that the rights of men come not from the generosity of the state, but from the hands of God." But they're snatching them away. Dr. Edsmere, author of the Christianity and the Constitution, said this: "At most, 5.5% of those attending the Constitutional Convention were non-Christians." That would have meant over 90% were Christians. So when you remove the Christian from the Constitution and from the government, we have a problem. We need to get back to the Bible. Christians need to get out and vote, and vote in those that best represent your biblical beliefs. You should vote. People just say, I'm not going to vote. I've heard two or three people say that. And then they'll say, well, if you don't vote, your no vote is a yes vote for the other person. That might actually work both ways, I'm not sure. But there is some definite guidelines that you can use. Israel. What about this moral issue as far as sexuality is concerned? Same sex, homosexuals, transgenders. You can use those as guidelines. Where do people stand on these issues? If you want to look at other things, you can look at. My doctors told me the other day, I went for a checkup. We got two girls in foster care, so every year we have to have a TB test. So I went to my doctors to get my TB test. And why you have to have that every year, I have no idea, but we do. So, and he's a liberal. He's always been a liberal. We've argued about liberal stuff. So he calls me into his office and he talks into his microphone there. And then he says, well, if Hillary Clinton gets elected, and this is a guy who was pro-Obama, pro-Obamacare, pro-Democrat. He says, if Hillary Clinton gets elected, we're going to be broke. I said, no kidding. She has a belief that every child whose parents make under whatever the number is, I forget, $125,000 or $250,000 a year, should be entitled to a free college education. Do you know how much money that's going to cost the American people? I paid my own way through college. Nobody paid me to go to college. I didn't get a grant. I paid my own bill. I think that it will break. I know that will. And I heard recently, and then he was pro-Obamacare. The second thing he said was this. This might have actually been the first thing. Well, it's going to break us. I said, what's that? This health care plan. I'm like, no kidding. I told you that before it was put in. I know, but I didn't think it'd be this bad. Well, I recently had a checkup with my doctor over in Syracuse. I wanted my back and hip and all that checked before I started doing too much intense therapy. So he says, Doc, I got to ask. And he knows I'm a Christian because he walks in and says, hey, are you still fighting sin? I said, well, the best we can, Dr. Harris' name is. And I think he's a Christian too. He professes to be. And so I says, how's this health care working out for you? He just looked at me. This is bad. This is really bad. He said, this is the worst. He goes, people can have insurance, but it's about useless. He said, the other thing, he says, it doesn't pay us. And it's breaking the nation. And I heard, Brother Case mentioned this the other day, that President Obama, I think it was Bill, who mentioned that Obama said, this really needs to be revamped. Well, it's his policy. Well, actually, Janet Reno's and Nancy Pelosi's and his and everybody else's, but it's breaking us. So you can look at that, too, if you want to. You can look at the moral fiber of the nation, and you can look at the First Amendment, the Bill of Rights, religious freedom. Which candidates will allow you more religious freedom than the others? I think it's pretty clear. The Second Amendment, I look at that maybe more than you do. But the right to bear and own firearms is, we have had that right. And originally, it was so that we could protect ourselves from a tyrannical government. Now, some people don't think there'd be a civil war in America because we couldn't win. If you know people who like guns, they are passionate about their guns. And I mean passionate. This is a sad story. I go to Albany to protest and rally and all that. Okay, two, three times a year. I don't go a lot. I've been to abortion rallies, and there's people there. But when I went to a gun rally, and a rally against the New York State Safe Act, there was thousands of people there. Jason McGuire was upstairs looking down at the crowd that we were assembled in the courtyard and in the hallways. He said, this is by far the largest rally I've ever seen here. I mean, people are passionate about their guns. They might be one group of people that would say, we're not turning them in. That could very well happen. You might remember a few years ago, I don't think it was five, and I think it was in Mexico, or New Mexico, it was in New Mexico, couldn't be in Mexico. Had to be in New Mexico, I think, or Nevada, where the farmers let the ranchers graze on all that land. They've done it for, like, ever. And they pay a tax to the county that they're in. And so the federal government comes in. Of course, they want a piece of the pie. If you don't know the story, it's the most bizarre thing ever. They were afraid a cow grazing on there was going to step on a turtle and kill the turtle. The turtles ate the pods of the cows. You know what the pods are? Figure it out if you don't, okay? But anyway, that was their food. So it was ironic that the government wanted the cows out when it was exactly the food that the turtles used to feed on. But the ranchers were like, we're not. And then they wanted the ranchers to pay a tax. They said, we're not going to pay it. We're already paying a tax. Enough is enough. And then it got to where on this side of the road where the federal government and they had snipers and people with guns. And on this side of the road were the ranchers and they had their snipers and they all had guns. And if somebody would have fired one shot, that would have turned into a bloodbath. But nobody, thankfully, and the wives are up there and they're praying. They don't want their husbands to get shot, but their husbands aren't backing down. They said that this is our right. We've had this. Why does the government have to own so much land? Did you ever ask yourself that question? You know how many thousands of acres the United States government owns? The government doesn't own any land, technically, and they really don't have any money. You know whose money they waste? Ours. The government is supposed to work for you. You don't work for the government. Somewhere that got forgotten. The government doesn't owe you anything either. That's another problem. That's a whole other issue that you can look at when you go to the voting booth. So I don't know, but I look at some of these issues and I look at that issue because I am a gun person. And I don't trust one of the candidates at all as far as trying to confiscate the guns from the American people. It is for a virtuous and moral people. We're not moral. We're not virtuous. We're not religious. Anyways, I'm going to stop. Somehow I got one page out of I dropped these papers last night. Never did put them back in order. The tenth thing that you need to understand is this. Our fathers knew the depravity of man could and would create a problem. And it has. It really has. If this nation would have stayed to the Bible, would have stayed moral, would have followed the Constitution in its original intent, we wouldn't be where we are. And we're in an awful way. And I know of two families, and one of the reasons that they haven't had any children is the state of this country right now, they're almost afraid to bring children into this nation. While I don't agree with that necessarily, I'm sympathetic toward it. I understand their reasoning. And it's a sad day. So we vote in a week or two. What is it, 10 days? Not this Tuesday, but the following. Look at the issues. But I want to mention this before we go. There are a lot of local elections going on as well the same day. When you go to vote, you know, it's not like the president, that's it. There's a lot of elections that go on. Chuck Schumer needs to go, in case you were wondering my opinion on him. Okay, but his seat is up. I don't know how long that guy's been in office, but his seat is up. The judge is up. Richard Hanna, thank God, has stepped down, so his seat is up. There's some judges in our local area that will be voted on. There's a lot of local elections. New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedom has a voter's guide. I should have put it in the bulletin, and I forgot to. But you can go to their web, and you can see pro. It'll say opposed or against. It might say unknown in some. And you can see where those candidates stand if you don't know who to vote for. And it is hard to keep up with all the different people in all the different elections. But there are several elections that are going on. So go to that voter's guide if you need to. That'll help you. And if you don't know what to do, if you really don't know what to do, where the line that says conservative, just vote it. Okay, if you don't know what to do, that's the best advice I can give you on that one. But if it says green, there's a line now that's green, the green line. Number the tree huggers. You know, it's like they're all into green energy and all that stuff. They don't ever win anything, but they're always there. They have a right to be there. It's their freedom to be there, but they don't ever win. But that's who they are. So you've got like four different columns of people. They have the Democrats, the Republicans, the Green, working man, conservative, maybe there's five or six. but that guide will help you a little bit. So if you don't know what to do, go to that guide or just check conservative and you'll be all set. All right, let's pray. Well, Lord, as we thought about what made our nation great, somebody actually prompted my mind on that. The only thing that I could come up with right now is our history, our past. We thank you for our past, and we beg you to turn us back to that. And Lord, I would ask you to give the American people enough sense to vote in those that best represent biblical values. We've come a long way downhill. Our government only can really work for a moral and virtuous people. We've lived that out in our life. We know that. We would ask you to forgive this nation of our wicked, ungodly sins. And as Habakkuk prayed, Father, we would pray that in your wrath that you would remember mercy. We don't want what we deserve as a nation. We know what we deserve as a nation. And if we get it, we deserved it. But we really want grace and mercy. So we pray to that end. Lord, I would imagine everybody is committed to live for you no matter what happens in this congregation here today. But I pray, God, that you would turn the tide in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, you're dismissed.